It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Trace Yellis with Senate Republican Leader John Braun. The 2026 legislative session is just about to get underway. We're recording this on the Wednesday before the session starts on Monday, and a lot to talk about. One issue that has been talked about a lot nationally is fraud in daycares. And that's actually an issue that is now arising here in Washington State. Why don't you explain that, Senator Braun?
Yeah, so as you may have seen in the news, it's happened mainly in Minnesota, also Ohio, Colorado, a few other states where there have been what looks like, and I don't think any of these have been fully investigated yet, but what certainly looks like there are daycares receiving money from the state and federal government and not actually providing any daycare in real life. There are numbers here in Washington that suggest that same thing may be true. A large number of daycares, and these are usually at home-based daycares, where the proximity is really tight. There's no external indication that daycare is being provided. And again, this doesn't 100% prove anything, but it is getting a lot of attention and more attention in the news here in Washington. Do we have the same sort of fraud problems and misspending of both state and federal money that other states are seeing? And if we do, we should get after it. But I really think that whether it's there or not, what we do have is credible concern. People that look at the numbers and say, hey, this certainly looks like there might be a problem. And I think we would be wise to investigate it. And that doesn't mean, this is the United States of America. You're innocent until proven guilty. But by investigating it and determining, is it true? Is there fraud? And if there is, we need to stop it because we can't afford. And look, we had a budget problem. We can't afford to be wasting money or supporting fraud. And if it's not, we need to let people know that as well to make sure we maintain their trust, that they really believe that when they send us their hard-earned tax dollars, that the state is truly spending those as carefully and wisely as possible. So I'm pretty frustrated, let's say, by the response from some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that say, hey, don't look here. Hey, and try and cast aspersions on people that are simply asking honest, reasonable, straightforward questions about what looks like the possibility of fraud. The answer ought to be, let's look into it and see what's there, do it in a professional manner, and report back to the public. That's our job to do that. Let's get after it instead of hiding and not being fully transparent. That's just wrongheaded.
Yeah, I've heard there's actually some proposed legislation that may make it more difficult to investigate possible fraud in daycares.
Yeah, I mean, the very days after this became an issue in the media here in Washington, we had one of the folks in the majority caucus drop a bill that would basically shield all the folks who might be in this, working in this area from any sort of disclosure or transparency. That's 100% the wrong direction. If there's something real there, it should be investigated and there should be consequences. If it's investigated and there is no misbehavior, if the state money is being used wisely and well and legally, well, then let's share that with the public too. But we're in, if you're in public in government, your mission ought to be to build and maintain trust with the public. We serve them, not the other way around. And the idea that we would drop a bill that shields state government and anybody state government provides money to from any sort of transparency is just, I think, wrongheaded and destroys trust with the public we serve.
It's interesting because since I've known you, you've been advocating for fewer regulations for daycares. It's something that you're pretty passionate about, actually, is that, some of these regulations on daycares are really hurting providers and have actually driven some providers out of business. So obviously you're not asking for a bunch of new regulation. You just want investigators to take a look at this, right?
That's 100% right. On this issue, I've heard from daycare providers directly on this. They're like, how can this possibly be? We get inspected all the time by the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And yet by the data we have in front of us, it appears that there are other daycares out there who are not following the rules and aren't apparently being inspected. There just seems to be a mismatch here. And I want to be clear, it could be just a big misunderstanding, but you don't resolve misunderstandings by saying, hey, don't look here. You resolve misunderstandings by looking into it and making sure everybody's clear on what's happening. And if there is fraud, I will tell you, there is deep frustration, and I would even say anger, by people in our state and perhaps in other parts of the country, certainly in my district, I can tell you, who, you know, they get up every day, they work hard, they support their family, they support their community, they pay their taxes, and then they read in the news that there's this possibility that people are defrauding the government and misusing and wasting the tax money they pay, and they're just really mad about it. Well, let's engage on that. Let's go find out what the real facts are and make sure we share that. So and if there are people committing fraud, and we know this happens, we had huge amounts of fraud just recently during the pandemic. Unfortunately, the state government was slow to respond to that. And we kept pressure on. Eventually, they did respond. But this is the sort of the thing that builds distrust in government and makes us unable to be successful. So again, I'll say it again, the whole idea that the response to this is to hide things is terribly wrongheaded. It takes us in absolutely the wrong direction.
Some people out there may say, well, is Senator Braun a racist for making these, for saying daycare should be investigated? I certainly didn't hear anything about race or nationality or anything in what you just said, but that's some of what we're hearing out there, right? I mean, that by looking at this, you're somehow, and I don't get it, I guess. Maybe you could explain it to me, that you're somehow racist just for making a request to look at it.
In the news, I mean, there's been suggestions that some ethnicities are more involved in than others, but you didn't hear me say that. I simply said, where there is credible evidence of misbehavior, we should investigate it. It should not matter race, religion, creed. None of that should matter. It should simply be, hey, if there is some, again, credible indication that there might be misbehavior, we should investigate. And that's nothing racist about that. That's simply making sure that we are doing our job, that we're spending our money wisely. And if there is fraud, and again, without an investigation, we don't know that. But if there is, there should be consequences. It shouldn't matter, again, about the, you know, the race or ethnicity of whoever committed the fraud. The law is the law. It applies to all of us, regardless of skin color.
Well, with the session, it seems like lately, with every session, comes new proposals for new taxes. The governor now is out saying he supports, not to balance this upcoming budget, but he supports in the future an income tax. Everything we've heard is that Democrats will propose an income tax this session. What do you make of that? What do you make of the governor's comments? And what are you hearing from your Democrat colleagues about the possibility of an income tax?
Well, a lot of it's rumor, and so far, what we have heard and been told is that they are interested in passing an income tax. And I'll just remind you and everybody else that this has been ruled unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court on a precedent that's been in place for nearly 100 years.
Maybe you should explain that real quick. What's illegal is a graduated income tax. So basically,
yeah, that's right. Our Constitution allows up to a 1% tax on property. Flat. Income is considered property, and it's pretty clearly considered property. And it has to be uniform, meaning you can't tax folks at a different levels like the federal system does, it's graduated. So, yeah. So we could have one. We could always have a 1% income tax. But that's not what they're proposing. They're proposing a graduated income tax that would they see as be more progressive and make our overall tax system more progressive. Several things here, though. One, unconstitutional, would very clearly face legal challenge. Now, I don't know what the current very liberal state Supreme Court would do. They certainly have laid the groundwork to somehow magically call this not an income tax, but instead an excise tax, but which would be we'd be the only place in the country that does that. But that's what they did with the capital gains income tax. So it's certainly possible. The other thing to keep in mind is the voters have rejected this at the polls 11 times in our past. It's very unpopular, deeply unpopular. Now, again, they're going to try and brand it a certain way so it's attractive to voters and try and build popularity. But the fundamental fact is the voters have rejected this repeatedly, and we should know that. The other thing you keep in mind is just not even 2 years ago, the voters sent the legislature an initiative. They have initiatives to the legislature, and we passed it overwhelmingly on a bipartisan vote. Most of the Democratic caucus voted for this bill to ban an income tax. The idea that we would 2 years ago ban an income tax statutorily and then, you know, rethink it and say, oh, no, it turns out we did want one. That's just it makes it hard to trust what they say that they're in. We've had, you know.
Well, a Senate leader had an interesting comment about that. A Democratic Senate leader. What did he say exactly? Something about Mary Poppins.
Yeah, the quote went something like, that's a statue. That was a Mary Poppins promise or a pie crust promise. That's a Mary Poppins pie crust promise. Easy to make, easy to break. Well, that doesn't make me feel too good. I'm sure it doesn't make voters feel too good, because that means whatever they're proposing now, even if it doesn't come after you individually today, oh, that was a Mary Poppins pie crust promise. It's not coming after you today, but it might come after you tomorrow. In fact, it sounds likely that it will come after you tomorrow, because that's what they've wanted for a long time is an income tax, in spite of the fact that that folks at all income levels across our country continue to migrate from states that have an income tax to states that don't have an income tax. And that used to serve Washington very well. Frankly, since the capital gains income tax went into place, our migration into Washington has gone down considerably. In fact, I think it's now net negative. And I believe in the wisdom of the people. If people are moving en masse from one place to another, there's almost certainly a good reason. And when you look at it, it's not just, you know, certain income levels, it's people across income levels. They're making a decision on how they provide the best life for themselves and their families, and they're moving accordingly. Yeah, that doesn't bode well for Washington.
People didn't move to Washington from California because they hate sunshine and love rain. I mean, they moved right here for a reason.
That's right. We have a beautiful state, but it's not always warm and it's not always dry.
The combination of no income tax and also, a much more affordable, well, used to be much more affordable here. Because that's the other thing we're talking about is affordability, a word that's kind of been hijacked by some people. But the bottom line is this, our state has become very unaffordable, and an income tax would only make it more unaffordable, right?
100%. I mean, all across the board, everything that consumers deal with, it's become less affordable in recent years: food, gas, housing, childcare, healthcare. And when you dig into it, without exception, it's become more unaffordable. The prices have gone up because of policies put in place by the majority Democrats. So they want to talk about affordability too, but they don't really want to do anything about it. They think fixing affordability means giving away more free stuff from government, when what it really means is running a government efficiently, fairly, effectively, and not taking any more than you absolutely need in terms of taxes from the citizens and allow them to build, you know, to afford to live here in the state of Washington. And we can go through the stats, you know, whether it's housing or food or restaurants, you name it, gas. We are all, in all these areas, Washington has moved significantly in the wrong direction. But broadly, it's all about this notion by the Democrats that somehow they are smarter than the average person, that they can spend their money better and they'll get them more stuff. And it's just not working out.
So the governor says he supports this income tax. I've heard several Democratic legislators say they expect, or they feel, I think they feel confident that the Supreme Court will say it's legal. It'll probably end up in front of the people, I would imagine, at some point. The governor even said that. The governor actually said that not only does he believe it will, that citizens will end up voting on it. He hopes that's the case, is what he said, that he hopes that voters have a chance to weigh in on this because it's that important. There's a long way to go on this, but the bottom line is that there's probably going to be a new income tax by the end of this session. And that's interesting. Yeah. You mentioned that the Democrats may frame it as being just for maybe the ultra rich, but isn't that how the federal income tax started?
Yeah, that's exactly how the federal income tax started. Is this was just going to be for the very wealthy, and now, of course, everybody pays at some level, and you look at states. The most recent one I believe to put an income tax in place was Connecticut, and it started at a low level. It got bigger and bigger and bigger, and if you look at the economic impact to Connecticut over that time period, it's been devastating. And we've been blessed in Washington with a very robust economy, and it's struggling now because of the taxes put in place this last year and frankly in years before that. But I think we can expect it to struggle even more if the Democrats go forward with this. I don't know that I would say it's going to be in place at the end. It's a 60-day session. An income tax bill is a very complicated thing to get in place. And the other thing is if they really mean what they say, which is we want to be a more progressive tax system, you can't just put a graduated income tax in place. You have to take away some of the regressive taxes, and there's been absolutely no talk of that. You got to do them together. And I want to comment a little bit on what you said about the governor's comment that it should go to the voters. I agree with him. Absolutely, it should go to the voters. And here's the real question in my mind, because we saw the Democrats do this with the capital gains income tax, even though it wasn't going into place for several years, and that's exactly the same case here. It wouldn't go into place for several years. Whole bunch of bureaucracy that's got to be put in place to run this thing before it could ever start. And yet they put an emergency clause on it. And
what does that mean, an emergency clause?
Yeah, you might wonder exactly what is that and why does it matter? Emergency clause basically says for this piece of legislation, it needs to go into effect faster than normal. Essentially, it goes into effect right after the end of the session instead of waiting 90 days until it goes into effect. And the reason you do that, sometimes you do that with good, with valid reasons. You have a crisis that really needs a law, or you found, some new, flaw in the law that you need to fix because it's doing harm to people. In this case,
yeah, something flooding related would be a good example.
Yeah, right? Something that, and it's common sense, right?
Right.
But in this case, everybody agrees nothing would go into place for many years. There's lots of steps. There's no reason for emergency clause unless you don't want the voters to weigh in on it. What an emergency clause does is prevent a referendum allowed by our state's constitution for the voters to come in and have their say. So you can the legislature passes a bill under a state's constitution. Voters always have the right to take that same bill if they get enough signatures, and you got to go collect signatures to put it on the ballot so that the voters get to vote on the same bill. And why that's important is because then you're voting exactly like the legislature. If you say I like this income tax, you vote yes. If you say I don't like the income tax, you vote no. Whereas if you wait and try and address it with an initiative, it's just the opposite, and it's really confusing for voters. Like, we've been through this lots of times, most recently two years ago now. And it really makes it confusing at the ballot box. So if the governor is serious about wanting it to go to voters, hopefully he will fight along with any Republicans that is, if this is going to go forward, it shouldn't have an emergency clause. It should have a clean shot at a referendum on the ballot and let the people decide if they've changed their mind. If they voted it down 11 times, but on the 12th time, they're going to approve it. Let them have a clean vote on that if he really means it.
The governor has also said that he will veto any sales tax, any new sales tax, or any new property tax. But a property tax increase is something that you're also expecting this session.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this pushed forward by the Democrats in the Senate for the last 3 years. And so this will be the fourth year. Every year they've said, hey, we're going to do this. And it's and I'll explain it real briefly. Again, we've been through this before, but not recently, is it proposes to increase the voter approved 1% limit on increases in property tax from 1 year to the next to make it 3%. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but because of the cost of property tax and the compounding effect, that quickly becomes a very big increase over time. Within less than 10 years, it becomes $1 billion a year increase in taxes. It's a big, big deal. And I am very worried that based on rumors I'm hearing out there, that this is something that the Democrats might trot forward again, only try to do it really early in the session. Because what's happened the last three sessions is we've been able to rally the public, and the public deeply dislikes this idea. Not Republicans or Democrats or independents, but all three deeply dislike this idea because property taxes are high in Washington. They're having trouble affording them. And the last thing they can afford, pay for is an increase, a significant increase in property taxes. This goes back to the affordability discussion. This is 100% in the wrong direction for Washington. But I am concerned that this is something they trot out early before the people are fully engaged in the legislative session and try and get it out of the Senate, at least to give them a better chance of getting this done.
Why would they do that if the governor said he would veto unless it's another one of those pie crust promises?
Well, I mean, the governor also said he didn't want to sign, he didn't want to balance the budget this last year on taxes, and yet he signed, almost $13 billion in state and local taxes. So, I hope the governor, is earnest in saying he will veto them. I certainly think that would provide some dissuasion for the Democrats to go forward. But I also know that they've did this. They've tried to push this forward for 3 years. They've been stopped by public opinion, and they know that they can get ahead of the public if they pass it early. So we're keeping our eyes open. We're going to be prepared for this if it comes up to the floor early in the session.
One tax that it seems like nobody likes, Democrats, Republicans, independents, you mentioned the property tax, but the business tax known as the B&O tax is another one of those. I think everybody agrees that it's not a good way to get money from, to tax businesses, but it's what we have. But I've heard that maybe you could help me understand this. Wasn't there also a proposal to expand that to allow counties to charge businesses a separate B&O tax from what the state's already charging?
Yeah, there's some ability to do that already. Cities. I don't think counties.
Yeah, cities. Yeah. Your cities can. Yes.
And yeah, there is. This is just another way that they have tried to kind of sneak in a path to take more of our citizens' money. And I'm sure they earnestly believe it is going to go for good things. But the idea that they collectively, the state and local government, can spend our taxpayers' money more effectively than they can, I think is wrongheaded. We have certain services at the state and local level that we need to provide, that we are the right place to provide. But this idea that we should continue growing and expanding government at all levels and provide everything for individuals, and we can do it more effectively than they can, I think is just wrongheaded.
There's one thing about the income tax that's being proposed and the B&O tax that I think, and again, you can help me figure this out, that are similar, is that like the B&O tax taxes gross receipts, right? So yes. Say a business, makes $1,000 and they put $900 back into the business, they're taxed under the full $1,000.
That's right.
So other taxes will just tax the profits, right?
That's right.
And the income tax is kind of like that too, right? Isn't somebody there? There could be a situation where someone who's making $1 million is actually, it's actually like a business. And so that tax isn't, it's not like a, Richie Rich's dad, I guess, paying the millionaire tax. It's a business, really a business owner. And again, it's taxed almost like the B&O tax and gross receipts, right? Is it something like that?
I know what you're getting at, but it's not quite what you're explaining. Okay. Yes, the B&O is a gross margins tax, and it's particularly hard on low margin business. Think grocery stores as an example, where they may be making 1 or 2% net, meaning that their profit, even though they may have a high, they may be selling a lot of stuff, they're not making much money on it, and yet the the B&O tax is on the gross. The same thing is true for car dealerships, as an example, where relatively low margins, and yet they're paying their B&O tax on the full cost of the vehicle when they sell it. What you're alluding to with this income tax that the Democrats are proposing is that it's going to be a high tax rate on adjusted gross income, and that's getting it's getting far down into the weeds. But when you do your 1040 for your federal income taxes and you take all your deductions and everything, that bottom number is your adjusted gross income. What a lot of people don't understand is if you're running a small business, say a limited liability corporation or an S corp, the business doesn't pay income tax and pay federal income tax. That's paid by the owner. So any income, and this is net income, the business sees, the owner has to pay tax on it. That's the way it works. But just because the business makes money on paper doesn't mean that money flows to the owner. In fact, more times than not, it doesn't flow to the owner. It stays in the business to cover capital investment, to cover working capital, sometimes to cover other employee-related expenses. There's a lot of things that to grow that business and to be successful, you have to reinvest that money, and therefore that money is not even available in some cases to pay federal income tax, let alone an additional 10% to the state. So you could very easily have, you know, hundreds, thousands even of small businesses around our state who on paper say, hey, we're making enough money that we have to pay this tax. But in reality, the owner's not seen in that money. That money is being reinvested back into the business to keep it thriving. And put that, what they're proposing, which would be a giant new challenge for small businesses and principally, and put that in context of, we just got a report a couple of days ago that says Washington has the highest failure rate of small businesses in the country. We're already doing pretty poorly here, and this is a death shot for small businesses in our state, in particular, small businesses that work here but provide services outside the state, you know, or product outside the state, where they're probably already paying some level of taxes in the state they're delivering the product in, and now Washington is going to jump on board and charge more tax. This is really, really bad news for small businesses.
It's interesting you mentioned the business failures. Our state's also not great when it comes to new business startups. So business births,
that's
more
right.
Business deaths, fewer business births, right? I think that's what I've heard.
That's right. I mean, we used to be a place where people came to Washington to start businesses, and some kinds of businesses. You talked briefly about B&O, and it's certainly not my favorite system either. But for some lines of business, it is pretty attractive. It's been pretty attractive for the tech industry in particular. That's part of the reason we have had such a strong tech industry in Washington state. It's one of the core parts of our state's economy, although the Democrat majority seems intent on running them off. And I think what you mentioned, which is we now have fewer and fewer starts. We're below average nationally on the number of business starts we have in our state, where we used to be above average. And that's just a reflection of people don't decide if they're leaving another high tax location. Say you mentioned California earlier, people used to say, hey, we can take this good idea and we can turn it into something pretty special up in Washington, and they we were successful that way. Now they don't think that way. They're thinking, I think I'll take this idea to a different state, say Texas or Idaho or Tennessee or someplace where they're a little friendlier to start up businesses.
Do you think in this environment, your dad would have come here to start a business building ambulances, the business that you now help operate?
No. I don't think any thoughtful person would come to Washington with a manufacturing business. We're here because we grew here. Most of our business now is not in Washington state, but we are physically located here. But no, if we were making that decision again, I don't think there's any way we choose to come to Washington.
That's Senate Republican Leader John Braun. I'm Trace Yellis. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus.